You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Hello, boys and girls. It's your old pal, Stinky Whistleteats. This is a documentary about Rugrats. No! This is a documentary about Ren and Stimpy. That's right. It's the Happy Happy Joy Joy Review.
Dun, 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 dun. Sing along, everybody.
Happy Happy Joy Joy.
Happy Happy Joy Joy.
Happy Happy Joy Joy. Oh, wait, no. Everything's actually really twisted and dark. Oh, wait, but I shouldn't give a reveal. I'll let Rose take us away on what we're talking about today.
Oh, you say that like Ren and Stimpy isn't twisted and dark.
Hey, everything is relative. I think that Ren and Stimpy's darkness could be perceived as, well, just kooky and not necessarily bad and dark.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But, yeah, with that in mind, we are talking about Happy Happy Joy Joy, the documentary on the groundbreaking and completely unforgettable Nicktoon Ren and Stimpy. From the early 90s.
Yes, a show that more or less defined my childhood, and even as an something of an animator myself, its influence still is present in a lot of my work.
Yeah, I mean, same. I mean, I was born in the early 80s, so right around this time, like, I was an adolescent. It was like the early 90s, and I watched Nickelodeon obsessively, and when Ren and Stimpy came out, I really thought that I was like, I wasn't sure that everyone knew about this. I was like, does everyone know that this is happening? Because this is one of the coolest things I think I've ever seen, and I was obsessed with it. And I also didn't really talk about it with anybody else. Maybe it's because I was, I don't know, a loner or something, but I don't remember having like a consensus of friends that said Ren and Stimpy is so cool. So maybe it's just like a niche cartoon for loner sad boys, because I guess I haven't met anybody who thinks that Ren and Stimpy, other than, like, you know, I did show Ren and Stimpy to my wife, and she was like, she was born in the 90s, and she didn't get it. She was just like, I don't know what this is, and I'm confused by why you find it cool. So
first we should introduce ourselves real quick. I'm Mike, the editor.
And I'm Rose.
I'm Santiago. I don't have a last name.
But my experience, yeah, is definitely, it really made me just obsessed with, like, cartoons that were kind of subversive and weird. It really shaped my sense of humor. I mean, that's its effect on me. What about you, Rose?
Yeah, I'm a late 80s baby myself, so I was pretty wee when it was first on, but I do remember catching not clips of it, but like watching it off and on, you know, when I was growing up, and it didn't really have as much of an impact on me until I was catching actual reruns of it much later as an older teenager and young adult at like 3 a.m. on the Nicktoons channel and going, oh, this is great.
Yeah, it's a show that has a really cemented itself in the history of animation, which is why this documentary is here. But Happy Happy Joy Joy is a story of a cartoon with a really complicated legacy. I would even say that this is the boogie nights of pop culture documentaries. So we spent a lot of time basking in the eccentric genius of John Kay and the Spumco team. How exciting it must be to be a part of something that was so punk rock and so challenging in the world of children's television. Everyone hanging on John's word, but watch this guy's star rise. And then, much like in the second half of Boogie Nights, we see everything plummet.
Yeah, I mean, this is punk rock and animation form. You hit the nail right on the head there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the central figure of this documentary. I mean, John, his last name probably gets massacred a lot, so I think they call him John K because it's pronounced Crick Falusi.
Yeah, Chris Falusi.
I've always heard Chris Falusi.
Chris Falusi. You know, I'm lame for this, but I've never actually like ventured into the, you know, who actually created this cartoon. So this is my first introduction into who these people all were. And I have to admit the documentary like also provides us a really interesting perspective into how this cartoon was made, and I honestly was surprised to know that there was that much work going into it. I mean, I knew that it was beautiful and I knew that it looked cool and I'd never seen anything like it, but I didn't know why. Like the fact that they used like, you know, real paintings for the backdrops that this genius, you know, backdrop worker was working on like just constantly. And like, I really love the idea that like these guys were just like a gang of merry pranksters who just like partied a lot and made cartoons. And that was one of the coolest parts of the documentary. Like, I think that the first half was great. It was like bringing me back to old times. I wanted to watch every episode all over again, and I was very excited about it. And I mean, just like you said, the second half was so dark, and I had no idea that this guy John Kay was such an egomaniacal, like narcissistic asshole who basically like you could kind of like hold these like double narratives in your mind about him, because you're like, oh wow, this guy's like a total genius, but he's also a scumbag, and he knows it, and he just like decides to vomit that all over everything and himself to his own demise. Like, he just, I think like the reason that like it got canceled is because he wouldn't let go of any of the cartoons. And anyway, I won't go into too much detail, but it's literally like a downward spiral of John Kay that led to just something that I don't know if everybody, I didn't know about this, but it led to a scandal that I think even today has had like no reckoning. And that's where like I think that cancel culture would just like have this fucker for dinner if it happened today. But you know, fortunately it's like in the past, and this guy for whatever reason is still kind of like, I don't know, walking around with his head up high. But this, that might change after this documentary gets its play. I think that this guy is gonna have a day in cancel culture court, and it's not gonna be a fun one.
Well, I mean, it's already definitely affected him a little bit. I knew some degree about this because I'm somewhat of an animation aficionado, so I...
Same here.
I had heard about his rumors about his scumminess off and on for years. It was just kind of like an open secret that nobody could quite prove. But then, yeah, when the two women that he abused stepped out and spoke up definitively, everyone was like, oh, okay. And so, yeah, watching this documentary for me as someone who kind of did know a little bit about the inside on... that part of it, especially watching it, I just felt this growing sense of dread every time I became just completely enamored with, yeah, all those great aspects of watching these artists just being allowed to practically run rampant and make this very, very creative thing. I would always have this looming sense of, yeah, but hanging over it. And I was worried that they weren't going to bring that up, but they finally do, because the story is told mostly chronologically.
It's funny you bring that up, because originally they had a cut of the movie completed that just painted John as an eccentric genius, and then that news story broke. So I had to go out and film all these new interviews and so on. And, like, yeah, if you're an animation aficionado, you know that the guy had an ego to him. He loved to just treat other people like shit and act like he was, you know, king shit on Fuck Mountain when it came to animation. But, you know, the thing is, to this documentary's credit, it addresses what happened, and they don't really give John much of an easy out. Like, yeah, he doesn't really get defensive, but, like, even when he tries to dodge a question, they're like, no, that wasn't, like, you gotta answer this question. They don't really give him an easy out. And, you know, don't get me wrong, John should be in jail. And I remember Robin sharing a text from John after the article broke. That just makes you go, oh, double fuck John forever. Mm-hmm. But it's almost kind of commendable to see him come out and address it. He almost looks sorrowful. Still fuck John, but like, it does take some level of courage to come out and talk about it on film.
I think he still seems like a real piece of shit.
I got a totally different reading.
Yeah, me too. I'm sorry, I'll let Rose go ahead and then I'll...
Well, not totally sorrowful, but like, you know what I mean? It was kind of like that I got caught, but yeah. Fuck it, I might as well talk about it instead of dodging it, or like or even just getting worse about it, like say Kevin Spacey, for example.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not as bad as Kevin Spacey in that regard, but when they were pressing him up against the wall with these questions of, you know, did you do this, do you have anything you'd like to say to these women, and his response was basically, you know, well, I'm sorry they felt that way, which is of course the ultimate shitbag answer to give in that situation. So yeah, I'm just like, screw this guy.
And your heart breaks for everyone involved in the show, especially Vanessa Coffey, who is responsible for Nickelodeon being as awesome as it was back then.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing quite like Nickelodeon in the early 90s.
And yeah, and Vanessa Coffey was responsible for a lot of it. And you see this relationship with her and John. It's very collaborative. And then when John just gets his head so full of his own ego, when you see everything just implode around John, Vanessa is right there in the middle. She's the one who has the answer to Nickelodeon. She's the one who has the answer to censors. And then when she fires John, she's the one who comes out looking like a bitch in the situation. When
yeah, and she was his champion.
Her hands were tied, and, you know, I get it. And your heart just breaks for her. Cause Vanessa Coffey, fucking genius when it came to children's broadcasting back then. And everyone started just acting like it's her fucking fault.
It did kind of seem like she had some, like, apprehensive feelings about the relationship that she had with John. And there certainly seems to be, like, just, like, a lot of unchecked aggression and not a lot of closure for a lot of people involved in the scenario, which why I think, like, kind of this documentary may, like, you know, kind of start a domino effect of people getting back in touch with each other, because it does seem like there's just not a lot of context on what happened after all this stuff was discovered to John. And back to, you know, kind of like how the situation was read when he was confronted by the documentary filmmakers about it. I feel like he knew it was coming, but this guy, I don't think he's quite felt enough remorse, because I mean, he did almost sound like he thought that saying I'm sorry would make it all feel better. And that was really dark. And I honestly, I hate to say this out loud because I've been thinking about it ever since I watched this documentary, but this documentary ruined Ren and Stimpy for me. And I don't think I'll ever watch it in the same way again. That sucks.
Oh, sure.
But I don't really know, like, what to do about that. I may never watch it again. Honestly, I may never look at it again, but just because it makes me feel gross inside. But that is just maybe a consequence of our times. Maybe I'll move on, and maybe there's another end of the story that maybe hasn't been told yet. But that being said, I do think this documentary was great and well put together. I think the fact that they did it in chronological order really kind of says to the fact that, you know, there's still, you know, there's still unresolved scenarios in this. And, you know, John is still kind of walking out there being this, what seems to be like this egomaniac who still feels like he didn't really do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And that's sad.
Well, also, the thing is that's great about this doc is that if you follow John Kay's work after Ren and Stimpy, as I did, you see why those other projects failed, especially the Adult Party cartoon, which is this god-awful Ren and Stimpy reboot from 2003. It was a massive failure, a total disappointment, and we attribute the original show to John. We thought it was all John Kay's sensibilities, but then you realize that in this documentary, there's all these other people, like Bob Camp, for example, who really steered the show, and also Vanessa Coffey, who was the heart of the show. And with those people gone because of all these bridges burned and Billy West's talent, that you see why everything else from John Kay failed as badly as it did. Because I did go back and watch some of John's post-Ren Stimpy stuff after it all broke out. And I kind of had to admit myself, like, oh no, it wasn't just the party cartoon that sucked. A lot of the stuff he did after Ren Stimpy was not good.
Yeah, like, much like the original Ghostbusters, Ren and Stimpy was something that was a product of multiple entities contributing to it and not just one single factor that can be taken and replicated just because, you know, oh, it's Ren and Stimpy, it'll always be a success. Well, no, obviously not.
I feel like maybe it didn't do as much to talk about Billy West. Like, Billy West only shows up for maybe a minute to talk about where the Stimpy voice came from. And I feel like I wish I saw more Billy West in that doc. And I wonder if that's what maybe made the cutting floor after everything broke out about John.
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't mention him taking over the role of Ren after John got the boot.
I think that's actually a very good point. I mean, during this documentary, like, I was thinking about the idea that great teams are not necessarily like that of the leader. Like, this John was a very charismatic person who had the personality to that, I guess, a lot of these guys, you know, really benefited from, because he could get them into places where they probably couldn't get themselves. And I think that that's kind of where John's, like, talent is. Like, he has just, like, a weird knack for communicating and being outlandish and getting the attention of these top executives. And then it's, like, his team that executes. And once they were all gone, it was obvious that he was nothing without them. But it also says something to the fact that, like, there's a gift that some people have that is not necessarily, you know, it's not, like, something tangible. It's basically just, like, they have a unique like gift or personality. Like I often tell people that like Joe Rogan is just like a super average person who can actually talk to just about anybody for like 4 freaking hours. And like that is, I think, a rare gift. Like I don't know anybody who can talk for 4 hours and just like still keep it somewhat interesting. I know that his podcasts go on for hours, but I feel like there's a similar kind of like air of just like what the value of someone is, where it's like they don't have necessarily like a gift as much as they're just like a really great facilitator, which is where I kind of concluded with John Kay as like the part of the Ren and Stimpy team. It's like the team like made these great cartoons, and then like once they showed them to John, he just like freaked out and didn't allow any of it to happen, and that's why it failed. But if he weren't there in the first place, or I'm sorry, maybe if he was there in the first place and then just kind of like faded away and, you know, moved to Miami and started, you know, hanging out on yachts while these guys did the cartoon, it would have just been fine.
Yeah, and the documentary also shed some pretty interesting light on his background, which I had no idea about. And of course, it does not in any way, shape, or form excuse his actions later in life with those two young women. But hearing him talk about how he translated his experiences to his with his father to several of the characters in the show itself, and listening to him go on about, you know, well, you know that thing that happens when your dad is just there standing over you and just the veins in his neck are popping and he's just so overbearing, and I'm like, no, John, I don't.
I think that says a lot about, you know, just, you know, really why Ren and Stimpy was so fascinating. And I think that they're the dark aspects that maybe are relatable to some people and not to others are what makes it so nuanced and maybe so interesting, because there was a lot of parts to it that I guess spoke to some of the darker aspects of life. And when you think about what could have occasioned that in an animator's mind, I mean, you probably would go down some pretty dark holes. And it seems like that was pretty accurate as far as like John, what he was saying is when he thought of some of these characters. And it was like, yeah, I mean, I always think that it takes like a madman to make something like truly genius and relatable. And it seems like this rings true in this scenario, because I mean, John obviously like was crazy or is crazy. And that is a consequence of like maybe something that he didn't handle in earlier in his life, but maybe that was the catalyst for having such a, you know, outstanding, like, I don't know, resilience to be able to have something like Ren and Stimpy happen. It's like maybe if John, you know, got fucking therapy when he was in his 20s, he never would have done Ren and Stimpy. So I guess it's kind of just like you gotta take the good with the bad, and that's why the narrative of two people in my mind exists with John Kay, where it's like this guy who was, like I said, a genius, but also just like, you know, a real sicko.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's probably about time we get in the final thoughts. What do you think, Rose?
I think this is one of the better documentaries I've seen in a long time. I mean, it covers everything pretty comprehensively. It gets voices and opinions from just about everyone. And it presents the less pleasant aspects of it pretty neutrally, pretty fairly. I give this a solid 9 joy helmets out of 10.
As someone who really loved Ren Stimpy growing up, who, you know, is, you know, really sad about, like, you know, the legacy that John left behind, this is a great doc. And I compare it to Boogie Nights because Boogie Nights is one of my favorite movies of all time. And I love the roller coaster of its narrative. And that's what I experienced with this. You experience the highs and the lows. You get excited watching this. You get angry watching this. You feel terrible for people who are involved. And you see the other people who made Ren Stimpy work as well as it did. And it does call into question, like, yeah, it shows will say created by, but how much of it is one person's vision? And sometimes, you know, maybe you do need some other people to interfere or make your show better. But yeah, it definitely brought up a lot of great memories, but also it really just made you sad along the way. And you wish that it didn't in that way. You wish that the whole documentary with, and this show is going to be beloved for generations, and sadly it's not. But we got a really compelling documentary out of this, and I think that every one who was a 90s kid who loved 90s Nickelodeon should watch this. And so I would give it 8 out of 10 nose goblins.
I think I echo everybody else's sentiments. I mean, I think this documentary was awesome. It was really thorough. It was super entertaining. I learned things about Ren and Stimpy that were truly fascinating. And I know I said I won't go back and rewatch these, but I am already like second guessing that, because it truly was brilliant, and I think that it was something that people can draw inspiration from for many years to come, if they choose to watch it, especially after they watch this documentary, which will give anybody just a clear perspective of the kind of mind that it took to create something this unique, but also just kind of how like the detriments of being an egomaniac, and how something even this successful and this like unique and special can be destroyed by an unchecked ego. And yeah, that is, if anything, like, you know, a life lesson that people just need to really take in, because it is a really sad story. And it's more unnerving, and it can make you mad. But I can talk about this documentary for a really long time, because I do think that it's got a lot to it. And I actually might rewatch it, because it's just got so many aspects that I think that I want to focus on, because after it's over, there's obviously the fact that, you know, John Kay's story is so tragic and also so disgusting. But aside from that, the documentary from a filmmaking standpoint was really cool. I thought it moved along really well. And I thought that it also just gave like a very good, enthusiastic like run towards the beginning with all the music playing. And it didn't seem like they reused a lot of material, but the full circle of it was, I think, just really great. I think the filmmakers did an excellent job.
Absolutely.
That being said, I think that this documentary should be watched by anyone who ever saw Ren and Stimpy. I think it's great. I give it, I'm going to give it 8.5 out of 10 nerve-ending beavers, because they suck, and so does Charlie.
Oh, God, yeah.